Isaiah chapter 40, verse 27. O Jacob, O Israel, how can you say that the Lord doesn't see your troubles and isn't being fair? Don't you yet understand? Don't you know by now that the everlasting God, the creator of the farthest parts of the earth, never grows faint or weary. No one can fathom the depths of his understanding. He gives power to the tired and worn out, and strength to the weak. Even the youth shall be exhausted, and the young men will all give up. But they that wait upon the Lord will renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. I'm a storyteller, not a preacher. And the story I have for you today is titled, Cindy and the Snake. Now, if Cindy were to tell the story this morning, it would be completely different. But she's not here, so I'm going to tell the story. Many years ago, my daughter was in boarding school, a Christian boarding school, and every year they took a group to Borneo, and we're going to build a church, and so I got invited to go. And I knew my daughter, most of the other people I didn't know, and you meet at the airport, and you start to introduce yourself to each other, and you kind of form some friendships that you think you can maybe hang out with this person for the next week or two. And there was another person that was a nurse. I'm a nurse. I work at the local jail. But she was a nurse, and she was the school nurse. And she buddied up with some of the adult women, and I began to hear her tell them about how bad she'd been hurt in a marriage relationship and how she was never, ever again going to have anything to do with a man. And I said, note to self, stay away from her. She's been hurt, she's been wounded, and she has her claws out. And so we flew to Kuching, and Kuching is a fascinating town. Its nickname is the City of the Cat. I'm a cat lover, and there's a cat museum in Kuching. And so we stayed in Kuching overnight, and they had chartered some ancient Chinese buses, and they put us on these buses, and they drove all day up the coast of Borneo to a place, I don't even remember what it was called. All I can tell you is we drove until the buses couldn't go any farther. And then they had about five or six Toyota pickups. Well, they weren't all Toyotas, but they were four-wheel drives. And all the kids were running and getting in a pickup here and a pickup there. And I noticed that Cindy took her little group of friends and they went over and got into the back of a pickup and pulled the back of the canopy shut. She was giving the message, this is my group, nobody else is coming in. Well, everybody loaded up and I was standing there, and the leader of the group said, well, Larry, let's find a place for you. Opens up the first pickup, clear full, second one clear full. And he gets to the one where Cindy is, and he opens the back up, and he said, Larry, you're sitting right here. And Cindy looked at him and said, I'm not sitting next to him. And he said, then you can walk. Larry, get in. And she looked at me, and I looked at her. And if you've never sat next to a barrel cactus, I can tell you, that was a cactus. And she pulled her arms over, and she scooted over as far as she could so that we weren't even touching, stuffed in the back of this little pickup truck. And I thought, this is going to be an interesting ride. Now, the pickup was made up of hoops of steel covered by canvas. And so I reached up and got a hold of one of the hoops holding up the canvas and figured, okay, if I hang on tight enough, I won't bounce forward and run into her. And then maybe I'll survive this experience. And she was making sure that she did not make eye contact. She didn't talk to me. I was forbidden territory. And down the logging road we went through the jungle. And you could look out only if you leaned forward and looked through the canopy, through the back window, through the front window, and out through the front of the cab. Other than that, you're just in a dark cave in the back of this little truck. And I heard the driver doing some interesting things with the gears. And I leaned forward and I saw this long, steep hill going down to a river. And it was raining and the river was full and it was roaring, and across the river were two logs. And some kind person had taken an adze and flattened out the top of the logs just the right width for a truck tire. And I looked forward and I says, "Well, would you looky there." I said, "This is going to be fun." And I sat back up with a huge grin as the driver went from four low to four high. And she leaned forward and she goes, "We're not going across those logs." And I said, "You better pray to God we do go across those logs, because if we don't, we're in the river." And she looks forward again and she goes, "There's no way he's going across those logs," as we're picking up speed. And I hung on a little tighter and she goes, "Don't tell me we're crossing those logs." And I says, "Yes, ma'am, we're crossing those logs." And she leaned forward and she looked again. And she grabbed me in a huge bear hug and she buried her head in my chest and she screamed. And I put my arm around her to hold her from flying out of the little truck, and we went flying down the hill across the logs and then slower and slower and slower up the other side. And I tapped her on the shoulder and I said, "Would you get your hands off of me? I hate women." And she looked up at me and she was crying and she said, but, I said, "I'm just kidding." And she says, "Oh." And she slowly unravels herself and sits up. The other kids in the back of the truck are roaring with laughter. They think it's so funny that Cindy just grabbed the hated creature in the back of the truck. I said, "In times of danger, maybe I will be sufficient." And so the ice was broken. And she decided that maybe I wasn't quite the horrible creature she'd made all men out to be. And she no longer was all coiled up like a cactus. After all, she'd just hugged the life out of me. And so we made it to the end of the logging road. And then it was the beginning of a trail out through the jungle. And we had sent all of our luggage ahead the day before, and the villagers had carried it all in. But we still had our day packs and our few things, and we're hiking several miles through the jungle to this little mountain village. And there was another lady there named Lisa. And Lisa had come to make sure that her daughter was okay, because she didn't want her daughter going into a dangerous jungle village without her mother there to protect her. And I was walking along beside Lisa, and I'm kind of teasing her a little bit because she'd never been to the jungle. She'd never been out of the United States. And I'd been out of the United States. I'd been in jungles, and I'm having fun teasing her. And so as we come out of the jungle into this large clearing, there was this little picturesque jungle village, and there were all the villagers lined up to greet us as we came into their village. They'd been planning for us to come for a year. And at the head of the line was a frail little blind and deaf woman. And as the first person got to her, she lightly ran her hands over them, because that's the only way she knew who they were. And Lisa leans over and she said, "Why is she doing that, Larry?" And I says, "Lisa, we're in Borneo. They're man-eaters here." I said, "They're cannibals. She's the head cook." I said, "She's checking out to see which one they're going to eat tonight." And she goes, "No." I says, "When I get down there, all she's feeling is my index finger." I said, "I'm not letting her go any farther. I'll be in the pot for sure." And she goes, "You're kidding, right?" I says, "You'll find out." So that night, they had a great big celebration for us, and they have what they call longhouses there. The whole village lives in this big longhouse, and they had a great room, and everybody's meeting in this great room, and the village president had been working on his speech, and he very carefully gave it in English with some help, and he said, "I want to introduce you to the oldest living member of our community," and somebody tapped her and had her stand up, and he said, "And I just want you to know that she's a cannibal." And I looked over at Lisa and I said, "Told you so." And so Lisa began to have a really bad day. And I was laughing. Somebody sitting next to me said, "What did you tell her?" And I told her, "She's the head cook for this village." And then the village president went on to say that they hadn't eaten anybody in that village for one generation, and that they were changed now, and they were so glad we'd come to build a church, and so on and so forth. But Lisa still sat there having second thoughts about why she had come. And so the next morning, we're getting up, and there was a doctor that had gone with us, and he's going to do medical care, not only in the village we were staying at, but every village that was nearby. And Cindy came to me, and she said, "Larry," she goes, "I know you've been on a lot of these trips. Would it be okay if I went to Dr. Winberg today to do health care?" I said, "I'd love if you went with Dr. Winberg to do health care, because I do it all the time, and this is a vacation for me, and I'd rather go with my daughter to play in the mud." And she goes, "Good, then I'm going to go with Dr. Winberg, and I'm going to do medical care." And she had a certain concept of what medical care in the jungle was going to be like. And I saw her come out of where she was staying in white pants, a flowered shirt, and a white doctor's coat. And I thought, "Lady, you're climbing into a dugout canoe with a motor on the back on a muddy riverbank. How are you ever going to stay white like you look right now in this situation? We're out in the never, never land. I mean, you don't dress like that in the jungle." But she did. And Dr. Winberg looked at me and rolled his eyes as he walked past, and he says, "Do you see what I see?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And I says, "I'm so glad you have been assigned the task of teaching her how to do jungle medicine." And away they went toward the little dock where the boat was waiting. The little river that went upstream from the village was narrow, and the jungle is tall, and it completely grew over, so you're going up a tunnel. I got to go up it later, and it was awesome. It was like the jungle ride at Disneyland, only it's for real. It's not pretend, and if something jumps out of the water, it's alive. It's not make-believe. And so up on the hill overlooking the village, we're building this little church, and we're up there having a good time. We're building it out of bricks, so yeah, a lot of mud is getting tossed, and I found out if you made a little ball out of cement, you could toss it and hit the back of somebody's neck, and they'd throw it back, and we were just having a grand time. And I noticed the boat was coming back, and I thought, they can't be back from doing medical care already. And the boat pulled up to the little dock, and I saw Cindy jump out of the boat and run to the place she was staying. And I thought, that's interesting. And pretty soon she came out dressed totally different, went back and got in the boat, and then they left. Well, that night, we're going to where we're going to eat in this big great room, and Dr. Winberg comes up and he said, "Larry, you'll never guess what happened this morning." I said, "Oh, what happened?" And he said, "Well, you know, Cindy was dressed in all white." And I said, "Yes." And he says, "Well, did you see her come back?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "What was that all about?" And he said, "Well, let me tell you. We were going up this river, and the jungle's completely grown over, so it's kind of dark and shady in there." And he said, "We were only a little ways up the river, and we came around a bend," and he said, "there was the biggest snake I have ever seen swimming across the river." And he said, "It turned and saw the boat and raised up to see what was coming," and he said, "It raised up, and Cindy was sitting right in front, and it looks her right in the face." And he said, "She opened her mouth to scream. The snake had never seen a woman with teeth before, And the snake figured it was all over for it, and he said, you can't imagine how that thing was writhing and twisting, trying to turn around and get out of there. And he said, Cindy was totally terrified. Her white pants were no longer white. And I said, oh, really? He goes, I was scrambling trying to get my camera to get a picture. He said the boatman was enjoying it so much, he let the engine die and leaned back and was just howling with laughter. And he says, so we brought her back. And I told her that Larry's long gone working up there. You'll have to come back and be the nurse. And he said, we made it through the day. I said, really? And here comes Cindy. Larry, would you please go with Dr. Wenberg tomorrow? I said, well, Cindy, we've already got our little teams all set up. We've got a rhythm going. And I said, and if I'm not there to lay brick, who's going to lay brick? I said, are you a bricklayer? She says, no, I've never laid a brick in my life. I says, well, I think you need to continue your course of education with Dr. Wenberg. And so it was. Cindy had an experience. But, you know, I wonder how many of us, going through the journey of life, have certain expectations of how we're supposed to live our lives. We have certain expectations of who we're going to sit next to in the truck as we go through the journey of life. We tell God, would you send me this person with this personality, with these traits, or else I'm not going to sit by them. And so it is. We give God our request. God turns around and he says, I need you to sit by this person. But Lord, I'm telling you, sit by them. And next thing you know, God knew what he was doing. When God sends us up the river of life to do a job for him, and we get dressed the way we think we're supposed to be dressed, and we have our knowledge, and we have our little bag full of tricks, and we confront the old devil rising up out of the river, and we're totally terrified. How many of us stop to think, did God put me here? Am I supposed to be here? John, the book of John is one of my favorite books. In John chapter 10, verse 27, I read this. My sheep recognize my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. No one shall snatch them away from me. For my Father has given them to me, and he is more powerful than anyone else, so no one can kidnap them from me. You're sitting in the front of the boat. The devil raises up to get you. Can he get you if Jesus sent you there? No, he can't. Because who is stronger than anyone else? The Father. And who is looking out for your well-being? The Father. Because who gave you to Jesus? The Father did. That, to me, turns what was a terrifying situation into a fascinating situation. You could be like the boatman in the back of the boat going, wow, you old snake. You better get out of here because you're about to get in huge trouble if you mess with a son of the Father. And the snake looks and says, uh-oh, he or she knows something I don't know. I'd better leave. There's another verse in John. Chapter 11, verse 25. Anyone who believes in me, even though he dies like everyone else, shall live again. He is given eternal life for believing in me and shall never perish. How much different is a ride down a muddy hill in a little pickup truck with the driver going as fast as he can go so when he hits the logs, he knows momentum will carry him to the other side. It's a thrilling ride rather than a terrifying ride. If you look at it from the viewpoint, God the Father gave me to God the Son. Both of them are looking out for my well-being. Even though I die like everybody else in pain and misery, that's not the end. It's not even the beginning of the end. Because for those that Jesus chooses, there is no end. So, Cindy was different after that. She came and sat down next to me at supper and said, "Larry, how do you do this in the jungle? How do you do that in the jungle? How do you handle this?" And I said, "I've got a book for you. Read it tonight. You can't read all of it, but read part of it. And tomorrow, Dr. Wenberg can start looking to you for direction. It's a little book called Where There Is No Doctor. And it's written in third grade English. Anybody can read this book and take care of the common problems that you're confronted with in the jungle." And I said, "You're an RN. You have the knowledge. You have the education. You've never been in the jungle before. Take this book. It'll help you." She survived. The church got built. We had a fabulous time. All the kids rejoiced. We hiked back out. We got back in the back of the trucks. Cindy was no longer a barrel cactus. We got back to the buses. We got back home. Interesting experience just recently. I work at the jail, and sometimes they come in by the van load, and they put them in a holding cell. Well, if any of them are on medications, I'm supposed to figure out what medications they're on and have those medications ready for them as soon as possible. If I wait until they're all done processing and putting them in a cell, hours could have gone by, and some of them can't be hours without medication. And so as soon as I hear that the vans come in, I go down to what we call booking and ask the guard if I can go in the cell and talk to them. I never realized that on the inside of that cell door, there is no key slot. It's just a door. And the only one that can open it or close it is the guard on the outside. Well, he hands me the key. And usually the guard had opened the door. I've been there about a year and a half. The guard opens the door, and I go in, and they almost close it, but not quite. And then they're watching it, so if anything bad happens, you know. Well, he said, "I'm really busy right now doing all these booking." He said, "Just go take care of them." Unlocked the door, walked in, and it clicked shut behind me. And one of the prisoners kind of gave me a startled look, and I turned around and realized I am in there with the key that the guy on the other side usually uses to open the door. And so I look at all these prisoners, and I said, "Guess what, guys? I have the key. That guy out there can't get in here to bother us, so let's all have a good time." And I sat down and started taking care of the first person. Put the key in my pocket. I see the poor deputy on the outside scrambling on the phone. "Somebody's got to get down here. Larry's in there. He did a stupid thing." And I thought, "No, I didn't. I'm not in here alone. God the Father gave me to God the Son, who is looking out for me. Even if they kill me, what do I have to worry about?" So I took care of business. Sooner or later, another deputy came, quickly unlocks the door. I said to the guys in there, I said, "Aw, shucks. I thought I had the only key. They just came in here to bother me." And I quietly walked out the door, let it latch behind me, and with a smile, gave the key back to the deputy. He said, "We were afraid what was going to go on there." And I says, "Yeah, I know, you're supposed to protect those guys, but I said, for a few minutes there, they were at my mercy." It's a whole different attitude to go through life with. If the young lady I work with would have gone in there and that would have happened, she would have panicked. She would have been like Cindy. They're going to do all these harmful things to me. Terrible things are going to happen. Rather than, huh, here I am, but I'm not alone. You poor characters. What's going to happen to you next? They look at me and they say, what does he know that I don't know? Strange gossip has been floating through the jail. I heard one of the inmates the other day explaining to one of the deputies that I was an ex-lightweight boxer champion. And he said, and besides that, he's an expert in the martial arts. And I said, what am I hearing over there? He goes, it's true. We all know it's true. And I said, it couldn't be farther from the truth. And he says, we know better. We know better. And I thought, okay, they know better. They know that God the Father gave me the God the Son. And he's looking out for me. Do I know the martial arts? I know nothing about self-defense. Am I a boxer? I've only hit one guy one time in my life, and we were both friends and we were horsing around. I'm not a boxer. But to them, they know to leave me alone. Will I never be assaulted? I don't know. That's something God's up to. But I don't go through life in total terror that something horrible's going to happen to me working at the jail. I find myself, and I did this last week, every once in a while, forgetting who I am, forgetting who's looking out for me, and I slip and fall just like every one of you here. What's going to happen? Who's going to take care of this? What am I going to do? And then I feel somebody tapping me on the shoulder saying, I'm right here. What are you worried about? Quit leaning forward, looking through the window, getting terrified about how we're going to cross the river. Sit back and relax. We will soon be across. I wonder how many of us spend too much time dwelling on the fear of going into the river that we're never going to go into. How many of us miss the opportunity to enjoy the journey? How many of us sitting in the boat going up an adventuresome river get terrified by a snake, not realizing the snake is more afraid of us than we are of him? What a difference it makes as we go through the journey of life. What a difference it is to read the book of John and read all about the places where it says, if you accept me, you are going to live. If you claim my name, you have eternal life. And that's not just something to look for in the future. That's something to look for right now, today. And that's my message for today. May God bless each one of you.